Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Thank you so much for joining us. Joining me today is Travis.
McClunky.
Who's on the banner, officially. We made sure to get that.
I am. Such an honor.
You deserve it. And Brian Malkowitz.
C-team.
Yeah. Long time co-host, Brian Malkowitz. How long have you been doing the show now, Brian?
Oh, boy. Let's see. I mean, I think I joined the show to help fill it out after like Finnegan and Fran left. It's got to be almost like a year and a half, maybe almost two. Oh,
it's definitely more than a year because my year episode was in September, the anniversary.
Which is crazy to think about it because like I could imagine it being a year for me. So the fact that it's been a year for you is kind of like, wait, how old am I?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally.
And should I keep saying C-team?
Apologize for not being able to record last week's episode. I had some very serious personal stuff come up that was needed to take priority. We're back this week, and we're going to be talking about Destiny 2 and how it is preparing. And believe it or not.
I was thinking we would talk about Anthem.
Yeah, we got some really, really cool news this week, though, guys. They're sort of talking about how they're upgrading the engine, what they're doing. Travis, why don't you tell us a little bit about what they revealed this week, about how they're changing the game. There's really cool tech under the hood now.
Yes, yeah. So a few things were a little bit above my head and technical-wise. One was they changed mission scripting, which I believe means that they can... they're giving developers more tools to kind of do more things with the way missions work. So hopefully it's not just go to this area and kill this thing for every mission. So they did that. They're changing the way lighting works on EDZ and Nessus, since those planets are the only two that are staying behind that are here now. So that will mean that the visual design is kind of consistent for the new areas. And then some of the big ones, those are kind of minor in my opinion, but some of the big ones are they're changing the file size. So the file size of Destiny 2, you're going to have to re-download it, but it's going to be a lot leaner. And then hopefully future updates will be smaller. And it also gives them the ability to do hot fixes faster, which means that they can nerf all of your favorite weapons and armor in record time. Which is
right,
great.
Right on the fly. Yeah. For me, the idea that Destiny is going to have variable weather was it's just like one of those small touches. And man, the Sandbox team just does such an amazing, excellent job in the world of Destiny. And I really appreciate that they're looking at ways to continue enhancing the game, especially because we've been playing sort of largely in the same sandbox for so long. It's neat that they're going to change it up and add new enhancements. Brian, was there anything that jumped out for you and excited you about these new implementations?
Well, first thing that I just really thought about it, because I didn't think about it when reading the TWAB about the lighting enhancements to EDZ and Nessus. I thought about it. It's like, but what about Tangled Shore, the Moon, and the Dreaming City? Those are, you know, three locations that are also staying in the game. Are those, because the lighting in those don't, those places don't seem much different than what we have on EDZ and Nessus. I'm curious as to why those aren't getting a lighting overhaul as well, unless there is something under the hood that does make them better. I don't know. I'm not technical behind it, but that seems interesting to me. But I am excited to see what they can do with this mission scripting to make missions a bit smarter, less what I think Travis said earlier was go places, shoot things, and end mission. So I'm hoping to see some changes there to shake up what we're doing in the game pretty much 100% of the time.
Yeah. The other big change was they're changing the way that character faces look. I think they're doing a little bit of an upgrade to their engine. And they said that in the future that gives them the option to let us customize our characters a little bit more, which is great because my guy is super ugly. I made my human Titan. I tried to make him look like the standard stock version of Commander Shepard from Mass Effect, and it did not go well. And I've had that face for 5 or 6 years.
There's so a lot of people who regret that. Like that
I've had this face for like 38 years and I've gotten by, so it's okay.
Yeah,
when Lord, can we change our looks?
Yeah, beards. Yeah. I think beards have been a long requested thing that people would like to tweak. I know Eric's would really like that. So
I'm also hoping that this means like other character faces in the game because. Yeah. Some of the actual characters that you look at when you see them in the world, their faces, their faces kind of look like just okay. This is an NPC.
Like super frizzy. You know?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. For me, Zaval is the one that always looks just like a generic Awoken to me. He doesn't like visually look that interesting, which is unfortunate because in the CGI trailers he looks so cool. But
So just real quick, going off on a tangent. Who is your favorite design character? Because I know mine immediately. So I'll start. Petra Venge is probably one of the best designed NPCs in engine, in cutscenes, just everything. I really, really like how she has the knife flip, just that mechanic that she'll do repeatedly. And Petra Venge is probably one of my favorites. Do you guys have somebody that you particularly liked?
The spider. I just like everything about the spider. He's just
he always has cold legs and he's just under that blanket all the time.
Yeah. He just looks like he kind of reminds me of like those villain, like you know the stereotypical like large villain who's got all of his spiders everywhere. It's great, but yeah, that's kind of cheating because his face is definitely not what is interesting about him, right? It's everything else. But just in terms of like
face, his aesthetic, everything about him.
His voice is. Yeah. I guess it's Eva 1 for me is the one that like the face I think is pretty cool because Exo's what's her
Ada.
Name?
Ada 1.
Ada. Oh, I love that you're saying Ava Levante. Like
close.
Don't take them
all. Yeah. I wouldn't take them. You go, Brian. You go.
I have no idea. Like one that really stands out to me, I guess would have to be Mara Sov. I mean, her jacket alone is really cool, right? Like, you know, just very poofy up here. But yeah, I'd say probably the queen. But then there's Shax, though.
Shax doesn't have a face, though. No. I think
if we're talking faces, then yeah.
Yeah, Shax is sort of like the reason they need to upgrade their engine because when they can't make a face, they just throw a helmet on it and they go, okay, this will be a unique character. And it's like, give us some faces, man. Give us some people to remember.
We'll probably get a face.
Yeah. You think so?
I think someday.
I think the Grimoire entry, the helmet stays on, solidified that we will never ever see Shax's face. So
everybody in the comments, everybody watching the live premiere on YouTube, definitely let us know what you guys think about the NPCs and who your favorite is or least favorite. Because this is kind of neat. It's kind of neat to just think about these characters.
And not just your favorite characters, but your favorite design, your favorite looking character. Like,
I can tell you my least favorite, hands down, my least favorite design character is Uldren Sov. He just looks he looks like somebody made a mistake in the character creator. You know?
It looks like they were designing Destiny for a very long time, and one of the designers was still going through their emo phase from 2006, and that was the character.
For sure.
And they just kind of had to stick with it because he was in all the trailers and all the promotional material. And
speaking of trailers, we did get a new trailer. How do you guys feel about the return of the long missing character Varix is back?
You're gonna say something else?
No, how do you feel about it?
Where are you indifferent, because like in D1, you know, everybody loves Varix, you know, his voice, you know, iconic, like dismantle minds, yes, all that. Mm-hmm. But you think about it, everybody's like, oh yeah, my boy is back, heck yeah. But it's like, but Varix is the reason all the barons from Forsaken escaped their prisons and led to the death of Cade. So it's like, dude's a traitor.
Is that what you think happened? You think he betrayed everybody? Take us through this theory.
dude's no, like he was the one who ran the Prison of Elders and he let them escape. There's lore about it of where like of Varix like just being a terrible, like just doing that and letting all of that happen. He, you know, he was the warden. Well, not, you know, the warden. The warden's like a big servitor, but yeah, like I'm interested to see where his character goes and if we're like all still super buddy buddy with him, or if we're just like, oh yeah, it's cool because you're giving.
It's complicated, loot. Brian. Okay, it's more complicated than that.
Sure, but you know, yeah. maybe I'm hoping that is like addressed in, you know, leading up to us meeting Varix for the first time in Beyond Light, and it not just being like, oh, here I am the vendor for this planet.
Wait, are you hoping that Bungie will close a plot loop?
Not close the plot loop. I just don't want us to walk up to Varix and he's just suddenly a vendor.
Yeah, it will probably be that. Anyway, I like Varix.
Maybe by mission
scripting. I disliked him, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get another Grimoire update to why we're friends with him, Brian, and then you can tell us about that. Another lore entry about why we're cool now.
We're just suddenly cool, yeah.
I mean, apparently we're going to be cool with Uldren Sov, so that's like the least of our worries, right? Maybe he comes right back.
It's easier to forgive someone who is no longer that person because, you know, he obviously died and woke up. You know, it's like, yeah, that body and that person before that, you know, before he was resurrected by a ghost. So it's like, right. He's not that person anymore. So it's like, I'm interested to see how they take that on, assuming he is in Beyond Light, even though we have really good reason to believe he will be.
Yep. So. Yeah, interested to see that. But yeah, I love Varix. I like that he's wearing a mask to comply with quarantine. It's all very good on that that front. So,
in addition to all this story stuff that we've been diving into during the show and the tech stuff, we also got a sneak peek at the map. The map looks substantial. It looks quite large, mm-hmm. which is definitely a sign of relief. Seeing we had to delete how many 4 planets to do it.
Five locations, 4 planets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 5 destinations, yeah. I guess, is the way to say it. But
did you guys have any reactions to the Beyond Light map reveal?
I'm interested to the southerly part of the map, which is called simply Beyond, and seems to be home to an enormous pyramid. I assume that's where all the crazy Pyramidian. Stuff is going down. God damn. Please, no. Remaster. Don't make me go back to the Pyramidian ever again. But yeah, I'm excited to see. I assume that's where all like the end game stuff's going to happen, right? Like maybe
isn't that the Deep Scroll Crypt? Isn't that where that supposed to happen?
Let me run it down for you guys. I have the website up right here, and I'll give you the descriptions. We have the Eventide Ruins. That's at the top of the map. Once home to thousands of settlers, and now all that remains of Clovis of Bray's. Sorry, all that remains of Clovis Bray's colony. I'll learn how to read someday. We have the
sounds Assyrian, like a starting area.
Well, I think Beyond is a starting area, but I'll get to that last. Asterion Abyss. The Vex structures visible on the surface are only the tip of the iceberg. We have the Cadmus Ridge, a snowy landscape, and the last known location of the buried Bray Exoscience Facility. Very interesting stuff. Karin's Crossing, or I don't know if I said that right, but we'll go with it. The site of Europa's communication center and the origin of a distress signal sent by Varix. And then we have Beyond. An old friend awaits us in the clearing that overlooks the conflict between light and dark. So I think that establishes.
Oh, you're right. That does sound like the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, there's the pyramid. They're like, here's the story of the light and dark. Go get your darkness power. And then, you know, you find Varix next. Varix is the first NPC you encounter. Then the story weaves you through the other locations. So what were you saying, though, Travis? You felt like maybe one of the other locations had potential to be a starting area. Why did you think that?
Oh, just it sounded like it was like a colony, like maybe an area where you know, kind of land there and things are not as bad and then it gets worse as you go. But I think you're right, because that cutscene has them sort of discovering something under the ice, and that could be the emergence of the ship, and that sort of kicks off the campaign. So maybe it's the location of the Icy Hive that Brian thinks is going to be just all over this DLC. But yeah, I think it'll probably begin there and maybe also end there if we go back into the ship and kind of have a similar situation to what happened in Shadowkeep. But yeah, we'll see. That's pretty interesting stuff.
I'm scrolling down on the same page. Did they update the box art? It looks different. Like, I think they redid one of the images because it has the stranger on it holding the thing now. And I think before it was just the triangle. So that's cool. Sorry. Brian, do you think we'll be starting at Beyond? And anything you noticed on the map that you want to call out?
Definitely starting Beyond. I always like to, you know, before these things come out, I always like to just like, you know, manage expectations on like size. You know, it was like, oh, this thing looks huge. It looks huge. It's like, but we kind of don't have anything really to go off of, because like, if you look at the EDZ map, right, you know, and you kind of got to scroll around to see the entire map to see how big it is. But that's like, that's how it was with the map for Mercury. When you open the map, you have to scroll around to see the entire area, even though it's the smallest like destination Bungie has ever put into. Exactly. It's like they just, it's like I'll hold on. It definitely, obviously, it's going to be bigger than Mercury. I don't think it's going to be that size, but it's just like, I'll, you know, before I think it's like this huge new, you know, thing they're adding to the game, it'll probably be like standard size, like Nessus. I don't think it'll be bigger than EDZ or anything, but.
I think they said it was roughly the size of Nessus at some point in like a Vidoc, but yeah, the thing that interests me is I noticed the Deepstone Crypt is not a named location, so I'm wondering, is that a secondary location, like maybe how the Dreaming City was to Forsaken, where we're kind of surprised with a second patrolable destination?
Would be pretty interesting, actually, for having
three. Which would be awesome. That would be awesome if that were in the game and we didn't know it. Nice little surprise. Or is it just like, you know, one of those things where you've got Europa's map and then off to the side, there's a little icon that says, you know, go to raid, and then you enter the Deepstone Crypt. So I'm not really sure
which method they're going. Yeah, but it would be cool, yeah. Like you said, like, because we're already getting two new locations with this DLC. So it's like the odds of us getting a third one are probably low, but like you said, it'd be a nice surprise if, you know, we beat the campaign and suddenly we open up this new patrol zone, yeah, or end game patrol zone like the Dreaming City.
I also think they didn't tell us about the Dreaming City, right? Wasn't that a total surprise, or am I misremembering that?
Oh no, I think they didn't really market it. So when you got there, I think they used a lot of the Tangled Shore to showcase stuff. So when you actually
there was definitely some Dreaming City like marketing materials and telling us like activities that we would be doing, but we didn't know that it was I'm pretty sure we didn't know it was a patrol zone. Like, you know, obviously they teased the blind well and all these other things.
Yeah, you're right.
But I don't think we knew that it was a patrol zone.
That sequence, cool, when you actually run and the ships are like flying next to you and everything, was actually quite impressive. It was just absolutely phenomenal to get to experience that in game. I hope they do something like that with Beyond Light. I don't think we start in the new area immediately. I think there's a call to action of some sort, and then we go there. I don't know. Maybe that'll be delivered in a cutscene or something. But I think the final mission that we're going to play that Tuesday before reset is going to set us up for why we're going to Beyond Light. And I think that's why it's been delayed, because it's a conjoining moment in the world of Destiny that will bring us into the new era of Destiny.
Yeah, they want us to play that mission the week before. It was probably always supposed to be that, right? The mission was probably always supposed to be a week before Beyond Light hit, so it wouldn't surprise me if we're getting it the week before.
Do you guys think we'll go to the Cosmodrome as part of the campaign?
I think so. Like, if Aldrin's gonna be a part of it, and like that might even be the first place we go to.
Why Cosmodrome? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because they're adding it to the game.
Yeah, they're adding it. It's like, if they're finally fulfilling that, like, so it's mentioned a lot, but like the original Destiny like gameplay reveal or that trailer that they had where Aldrin is on Earth, he's not sure why like everybody in the city is mad at him. So that they might actually finally be weaving that storyline into it, and that could be like an introductory, you know, reason. So like we could go to Cosmodrome first, as like, you know, as a lead up to us needing to go to Europa. Like, we figure out, I mean, I don't know how it's going to happen or why, but it, you know, it could be.
I think you're really probably cool. Right.
The last time we saw the Stranger was on Earth. you know, before she dissipated and into nothing.
In the tower, but, the old tower.
Yeah, it was in the tower.
I kind of think you're right. And the reason I think that is because they've said that they're not putting the full Cosmodrome back into the game at launch of Beyond Light. And that makes me wonder why not just hold off on Cosmodrome and give it for the next season as sort of like an in-between seasons or in-between major expansions thing to do, unless there was some reason you needed it at Beyond Light.
Yeah, my fear for that, or the reason why they're rushing Cosmodrome into the game is a lack of content. Not saying that Beyond Light is going to be super small, but they wanted Cosmodrome to help fill out the amount of content that's
it's a fair worry
because like obviously we're losing five destinations in the game, right? Like we're losing all those planets, moons, and the Leviathan. So it's like, crap, we can't just take away five destinations and give them one that's smaller than the EDZ, right? So it's like well, we're doing the content vault, you know, most of the Cosmodrome is ready, we can weave it into the story or whatever they're doing with it, you know. And that's why I think it's a little suspect that we're not getting the Devil's Lair or the Fallen Saber Strike at launch, just the Will of Crota. So it's like, why aren't those in there at the beginning? Like Devil's Lair, that was the very first strike any of us ever did. So it's like that one makes the most sense to be first, I think. So I think it's interesting that this is going to be Will of Crota? That's the strike.
I thought it was Devil's Run, the one with Sepkis Perfected at the end.
That's Devil's Lair, which is Sepkis Prime or Perfected, as he was in Rise of Iron.
Oh, right.
But we're only getting Will of Crota at the start, which is Omnigul's strike. And so it's a little suspect that those two are going to be, the other two strikes are going to be missing at the start of Beyond Light.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're going to add them in later.
No, they are. They are for sure. But like, I think it's because they need more time to
specify. Well, yeah, that's probably the real reason. But maybe it's a narrative play. Maybe there is going to be a reason. Because like when they reintroduced the mission that had the big servitor at the end, the servitor had chains. They did a narrative change to it, right? So maybe that they're doing that again. Maybe it won't be the servitor.
Yeah, just having happen there.
Or maybe it's going to be horrifying, and right when we think the campaign's over, you know, just a darkness pyramid's just going to appear over Earth and the Cosmodrome, and it's going to be completely different, and, you know, we're just not expecting it. That would be, like, dream status right there.
I mean, it's going to happen at some point, right? Because, like, but that might not happen until Lightfall, who knows, because we still have the Witch Queen to go through before we get there. So I don't know, but yeah, it's gonna happen at some point. The pyramids are gonna show up at Earth. They're not just like, oh, let's not go to Earth. It's just, you know, let's hang back here for a little bit. Like I think it'll get there at some point.
Yeah. Real quick, another thing going on this week. There is a really great dedication to Matt Halsom from Vicarious Visions. It's just really nice that they did that in the game. So be sure you check that out this week. And one of the things that we missed last week that would have been a pretty big news topic that I wanted to hear your guys' opinion on was about the ghost shells. Ghost shells are now going to be getting mods that you can slot into them that will actually impact what you're able to do. Some of the examples they gave were Blinding Light, increase XP gains by 12%. Great. Greater Core Harvest Vanguard, defeating bosses in Vanguard Playlist, Strikes, or Nightfalls has a chance to reward an Enhancement Prism. Excellent. Upgrade materials. So I think this is a good change. I don't know if that's going to impact like how much our power level is. Did they say anything?
It's not power level, but it does have 10 levels of like modable energy level where you masterwork the shell and then you can put stronger mods in it.
In my opinion, this is a much better system than they currently have for ghosts. I'm so sick of like just being able to slot a finder when I need it into my ghost, as opposed to having to have 60 different ghosts. Now I can just get the ghost that I like, and I can just put whatever I want on it, right?
Or yep. Yeah, and then maybe you can swap it out in your collections.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's definitely long overdue that we finally have this system so we can use whatever ghost shells we want without having to worry about crappy, you know, rolled on them. But
They should do the same for sparrows.
I think they will. That's why they didn't mention. That's why if you look at the mods, none of them mentioned sparrows or speed demon or anything like that. So if speed demon isn't a part of the ghost mods, because if you look at all the ghost mods they showed, none of them had anything to do with sparrows.
No.
So I imagine that sparrows are going to get the same treatment at some point, maybe not at launch. But I mean, there's no reason not to. But my fear is that if it does include sparrows in the ghost shell mods, that it's still going to, the best combination is still going to be like guiding light, which is XP gains and speed demon.
I don't use speed demon because my sparrow already has that.
But your sparrow, not all, you know. So like my favorite sparrow doesn't have speed demon on it, so I'm going to use a ghost that has guiding light and speed demon on it. But my other fear is that that combination is going to get like nuked by them making one or the other like have both have like one or like one of them have six take six energy and one take five, so you could never slot the two of them at the same time. Like they do with some of the mods.
Do that. They'll at least enable the combos we already have. I think the higher energy levels are going to be.
I'm just worried about that because that's like the defining role that a lot of people go for with ghost shells is guiding light and speed demon. So it's just like, you know, how do we shake that up? Make one six, make the other five, and they can never use that combination again. I doubt they'll do that.
My take is that they'll make all of the current ghost builds really easy to do with like a middling power level, and all of those like more expensive stuff that'll be for, you know, like ghosts that drop enhancement cores and some of the crazier stuff that ghosts can't do right now. That's what I think they'll reserve for like higher energy. So I hope that's the case.
Cool. Yeah. And Destiny's on Game Pass, which is awesome. You can play it on your phone if you have an Android and you're in that beta. I don't know.
That's right.
Oh, for Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah, so xCloud.
I'd imagine so if it's on. Yeah,
it's in beta, but it is public if you have Game Pass. And this is pretty interesting because it means that obviously the Xbox player base is going to go up a lot. And then I'm wondering if both Shadowkeep and Forsaken go free to play in the fall, because in the fall, Game Pass subscribers are getting Beyond Light as part of their subscription, which means that, you know, these previous 2 years could potentially be free to everyone, which I think would be a good move.
I think it has to at some point, right? Because like right now, the current free-to-play or New Light experience includes three campaigns, right? So when Beyond Light comes out, obviously I think they're changing the name. I don't think it's called New Light anymore for whatever the free-to-play experience is. But it's going to have significantly less content when those three campaigns are just gone. Plus, those
The other thing is, right? If you don't own Forsaken or Shadowkeep, what planets can you go to?
You can
if you're a free to play player.
Or there's no planets left being taken out.
Next season. What planets can you go to?
Hold on, they did talk about this. They said they're going to be changing the New Light experience. So probably,
but we just don't know. It's like
let's guess.
Yeah, of course. Earth, you can still right now. You can still go to Earth. You go to all planets for free if you're New Light.
Yeah, and Nessus, and that'll probably be it. But they'll let you go to all the locations.
You can still go to the moon. You can still go to all of it if you're free to play.
Yeah.
You can still go to all the locations right now.
Yeah, you can go there.
You can go to the moon. You can't
do the campaign.
You have to
get into the loot. Got it. I did not know that. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, like if you're free to play, you can go to the moon. You can go to Tango Shore. You can go to Dreaming City, I believe, too, as well. But yeah, it's curious how it's cute that you mentioned that, because it's like the free to play player experience has significantly less content starting in November. So
that's right. Yeah, that'd be weird going to the moon and not owning that expansion. It's like window shopping as a guardian. You're like face oppressed against the glass, but you just can't access any of those activities.
And that's
just
go up to Eris and she just ignored you.
Yeah.
That's basically everything that we wanted to go over this week. Did I miss anything, you guys?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's been a kind of busy 2 weeks considering that the content hasn't actually changed in game.
The fact that they're talking about systems and stuff under the hood changing definitely gets me more excited about Beyond Light. The fact that like Ryan McCaffrey at IGN has an Xbox Series X and I know he's got to be itching to play Destiny, you know. So we're really
excited. Can he love Destiny on that yet?
Be careful, Brian.
Oh.
I
I don't know. I'm just like wondering, like, what? Well, I'm not trying to break embargoes or anything like that. Yeah. Like you said that he has it, so it's like, but it's like I wonder what games can already be played on Series X. I have no idea. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Ryan has a console. That's what we're allowed to say. I don't know what the embargoes are. Ryan McCaffrey of IGN, he hosts of IGN Unlocked, another wonderful show that IGN works on.
That you're on.
That I'm on also, yeah.
Self-promotion.
Yeah. I'll definitely be hitting him up to check out like the menu and stuff as soon as I can get into it, because I'm excited to learn more about how those consoles will be enhanced. What will be enhancing the Destiny experience? Anyway,
were you guys able to pre-order consoles, or were
I did?
How'd that go?
Well, I don't want to say something I'm not supposed to. So, I don't know what the
you're still speculating and hoping.
Yeah, I don't like know that much. I don't have a console hiding in my house or anything. But, yeah,
it's in the background.
What was the question? Did I get a console? Yep, I got multiple PS5s. I got three of those. It seems like they're more readily available.
Why? Xbox. Why did you get three PS5s?
The reason we need multiple is
one for each room in the house.
Yeah, is because my wife likes video games, and we got a little one on the way, and we got to make sure as soon as he has a PS5, as soon as.
Oh my god, yeah. Dude! You got this.
No,
it's for work. We need to make sure everybody on staff has access to a console. So
normally we wouldn't buy that many because we get a few sent to us and we all just use them in the office. But now that we're all working from home, everybody needs their own Xboxes and they need their own PS5s. So yeah. It's like and the pre-order, and we got to pre-order because everybody's crazy for these things. So it's like, how many can we get? Everybody pre-order.
Yeah. So we were able to cover staff. So yeah.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I just realized I balked at you guys, at you getting three PS5s, but I also pre-ordered a PS5 and three Xboxes. So really? I can't really talk.
There's also the scarcity issue. People are getting multiple because, like, even me personally, I'm worried that they're not going to ship on time, right? So I want to have multiple sources, and as soon as one ships, boop, cancel the other one. And I think we're not the only types of consumers that are going to do that. There is definitely like a FOMO, especially right now when we're all locked in our houses, right?
Well, that and then every new major tech release comes with the scalpers too. So it's like,
I'm not a scalper. You know. Just to be clear, I got one. I got the Series X for my main entertainment center. I got an S for the bedroom.
These computers are already on eBay right now. For listing for a grand piece.
Oh, I got two X's and two S's. And the
wait, so you bought seven consoles this week, bro?
This we need guy. Them for work.
Flex.
He's not keeping all them. He's work. Distributing.
Don't forget
he's
getting to write paid those
back.
Off,
I'm just going to pay him back, and he'll distribute them to the people who need them, who couldn't secure their own pre-orders.
Exactly.
Ooh,
because it was a messy day. Everybody at IGN was like trying to secure their own pre-orders of this thing because they all want to play Destiny 2.
I feel fully realize we're totally off tangent, but like this is going to be important for Destiny. So,
For sure.
Are you guys going to be playing more on your consoles now? Because honestly, if they run smoother, I'm more excited about playing on console.
Look, I say it to people all the time. It's like, I will always main Destiny on PC. So like when I'm, trying to do raids and other big stuff, experience the campaign the first time, all that such, I'm always going to main that stuff on PC. But when I just want to kick back and I want to like lay down in my bed or chill on the couch and play, just grind some strikes out, I'm going to do that on Xbox. I can just lay down and chill and just play it. And I don't do it right now because like I might sound like a PC snub is that I can't do the 30 frames, man. No. It's hard to go from like, averaging like 144 frames down to 30. It's really not a good like experience for your eyeballs. So it'd be nice to have that 60 frames.
60 is fine. I'm surprised they didn't push it to like 1440, 120. Because the consoles can do,
I think they might.
The consoles say they can do 4K 120. I'll believe that when I see it. I just don't believe that.
I have I think have a 2080 Ti with an i9-9900K, and it cannot do 4K 120. 4K 120 is a lie. If you think that your Xbox is going to do 4K 120 on any game, it's lying to you. Well, it's not lying.
Dirt.
It's that you're misinterpreting. No, it's not going to do it can do 4K up to 120. So it's going to run at 4K at whatever frame rate, less than 120. And then if you bump the resolution down, then you can get it to 120 frames. But
Brian,
you
honestly,
are not going to get 4K 120 frames on any game.
I agree on an with Xbox you, or and I cannot wait until we get those consoles in hand, because there is no, if they figured it out, it's going to be astounding. I do not think it is technologically possible. You cannot have the speeds within the chipsets in those consoles to deliver data that fast.
Not at $500. The bottlenecking. Not at $500. And it's like,
you have a 10900. Did you say you have a 10900K?
It's an i9-9900K with a 2080 Ti, 32 gigs of RAM. And that thing, it can push good frame rate at 4K, but like, it's not even over 100. And, you know, for I think Destiny is like one of the main games I've tried it at, but it's like, you know, for people might come with the argument like, oh, they might be taking it at a loss for that hardware, but it's like, That's a $2,000 loss if you can create a box that can run.
Well, they're 4K, buying in bulk, right? They're buying in bulk.
Yeah, right. No, but yeah, like
it's going to downscale the main resolution to 1440 to hit that 120. I think it could potentially do 1440 120.
I just think you'll have to choose. I think some games will do 4K 120 if it's, you know, an indie game that doesn't require a lot of horsepower. Then you could do it. Games like Destiny, though, you're going to choose like frame rate or your resolution, right? You're going to have to.
We don't want people thinking that when Cyberpunk 2027 comes out, that they're going to be able to blast that baby in 4K 120 frames.
It's in 7 years?
And, did I say
2027? Like 7 years from now.
Yeah. No one's going to be able to play 4K 120 frames with ray tracing on.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I think a lot of people,
I see that in comment sections. Sorry to go off Destiny rails, but it's like a lot of people think they're gonna get 4K 120 gameplay, and it's just like, that's hardly possible on like $2,000 computers. Like, it's not gonna happen on console.
$2,000, the computer you just described was more than $2,000. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah,
mine was $1,500.
Yeah, but it's like
$1,200. Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I hate to sound like a PC master race, but it's like, I hate because it's all marketing terms, right? It's kind of manipulating people in a way to thinking that they're getting that take. It's so people will read 4K up to 120 frames a second and think, oh, I'm going to get some games that are going to play 4K 120 frames. It's like, no, the console can do 4K, but also up to 120 frames a second if that resolution is lower.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so the resolution you'll probably be playing at is 1080, maybe 1440 at 120.
For those high 20, yeah, exactly.
I would love to hear everybody's thoughts in the comments. Maybe you're like, you're an idiot. Here's the technological reason that's going to happen. I've been researching this for the last month, and we've been studying like how to do 4K 120 capture and doing all this prep behind the scenes at IGN. Like, this has been an obsession of mine. So if you have found a way that is actually a possibility, yeah, let me know. Let me know how dumb I am in the comments.
You know, go to Best Buy or Amazon and look for a monitor that can do 4K 120 hertz. Okay. Yeah. Like, those are
I have one. It's that Predator over there. It's $1,500.
I have one too.
Exactly. You cannot find a relatively good consumer-friendly 4K 120 hertz monitor for a decent price. You're looking at Go ahead.
The other thing that I think players are, and this is kind of like a PSA to Destiny players, just to keep it on topic, but like, the other thing is that televisions do not work the same as monitors, and most people don't play an Xbox on a monitor. Yeah. So the problem I've had is that I actually play my PC on a desktop or on a television because
you mean
I
your am console or your PC
on No, I play my PC on a television sometimes. I also have a monitor in you know the desk, but I play it on a TV, and the TV is usually the roadblock, not the PC itself. My TV, it's very rare for TVs to be able to do 120 frames. It's super rare for them them to be able to do like G-Sync stuff. There's only a few TVs that do it.
Travis, are you able to set your NVIDIA card to output at whatever resolution, 120? Because TVs,
yes,
and the one that you have is very expensive, should be rated for 120. And that's why the consoles are at 120, because they're not marketing to the 1440 hertz and above crew. They're marketing towards televisions. Most televisions after like a 4K television, most of those after like 2018 are rated for 204 up to 240 display.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to be rocking a 4K 120 hertz signal. That's the signal, though, and that requires 2.1 HDMI.
Yep. Yes, so I had to buy a special HDMI cable. I had to get a really expensive TV because my TV also has like a less than 1 second input delay, which is super hard to get on TVs. A bunch of other stuff to like maximize this. But I think oftentimes people's televisions are really going to be the roadblock with these machines. And I'm curious to see how the consoles handle it, because on my PC, I have to get into settings and set a cap and do all this other stuff. Otherwise, it just tanks the performance in game when I'm playing Destiny.
And this is an excellent question. Like, a lot of people in our community have been messaging me on Twitter and such. I haven't really had time to respond, but I'll tell you right now, you need to look into your television specifications. There's a good chance that your television will not support 4K 120. It might support 1080 120.
There's a very good chance it will not.
Yeah. But it potentially it needs a firmware update to support HDMI 2.1, or flat out doesn't support it. And like, I hate
that. And not only that, but it's like a lot of LG and Samsung TVs will say 120, but it's not true. It's 60 hertz with like a I think it's like TrueMotion or something like that on LG, and it's not the signal is not a real 120 hertz signal, so that's something to look out for too.
Yeah, I think we've gone off the nerdy cliff, so to speak.
Wow, we found out we're all display geeks today. No,
it's important because, you know, a lot of people playing Destiny, you know, 2 on next gen consoles, you know, for people to realize that, you know, the maximum they're probably going to get out of Destiny 2 is 60 frames, even, and because they haven't even announced at lower resolutions if it's going to run at a higher frame rate, higher than
Destiny
60.
Destiny has promised 4K 60, and I think that's not only responsible, but it's smart on their part, because you're not going to run into all this terminology problems. If you have a 4K TV, it can do 4K 60. I would be TV. Now, if you're talking computer monitors, like, I have a computer monitor that can only do 4K 60 hertz if it has a DVI cable in it, because it's old, right? So
you mean just, oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah,
DVI.
I didn't know DVI. Bought when the new consoles came out, Brian, that suck. Anyway.
Those HPs.
The Samsung, you can sort of see it here in the 3-up. The Samsung, though, I bought this in 2018. It's the KS800, and I think it needs a firmware update to do 2.1, if it even has it. I actually haven't looked. I'm getting a different display for 120 hertz. It's over there. Anyway. Nerdy stuff. I've been obsessed with this whole frame rate discussion, so it's just great to have people to talk with it about. Chat, I hope you're thinking about all this and, you know, checking out your displays and being prepared for next gen console. It does mean a lot of paying attention to what you're going to need hardware wise when it comes to all of this. Thank you to Travis and Brian. I really, really appreciate you for making the time to do the show with me today. But until next time, everybody. Guardians out.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.